James, thank you so very much for being with us.
Well, thank you for having me here, and sorry about last week, but I was attending to the birth of my new child.
Well, how is the mother and child doing?
They're doing just fine. They're both healthy and doing just fine at the moment, so we're all happy and just adjusting to the new life.
Well, I'm sorry. I think it was my mistake. But anyway, under any circumstances, I'm so well. They're happy that they're doing well. And it's good to have you with us to bring us up to date on your view of what's really going on economically. Because, of course, you're an expert on this. I'm simply an observer. Tell us what's happening from your point of view and what the future holds as far as you can tell.
Well, that's a pretty tall order, but I would say that one of the things that we should be looking at is it's what's happening right now, for example, in the gold markets, because as we saw, as you'll remember, last month, we had that huge decline that happened on April 12th, 15th. It was one of the biggest two-day drops in 30 years in the gold markets, and there was a lot of talk at the time about how this signaled the end of the gold bull market and how it was time to get out of gold, etc., etc. And of course, a lot of retail buyers were buying up gold at that time, seeing it as a buying opportunity, as we talked about. And it looks like all of those people were right to do so, because if you look at the charts today and if you look over the time period since that two-day drop, gold has regained basically all of the value that it lost, or all of the notional dollar value that it lost on the April 12th, 15th drop date. So it's now back up to around the 1470 mark. And it looks like it's doing just fine at the moment. It's holding at that new level. So again, there was a lot of basically hoopla going on about that at the time, saying that this was the end of gold as we knew it. But of course, the end of the death of gold was greatly exaggerated. But we still have people like Warren Buffett who are now trying to downplay gold and saying, I wouldn't be in it even if it was at $800. It's just such a poor investment opportunity, etc., etc. So again, we see the financial gurus trying to convince people that gold is not a good place to be storing money at this point. And of course, that flies in the face of everything we know about the way the gold markets really work and what's really happening in the economy.
Well, let me point out that certainly when Arnold Schwarzenegger was okay to become governor of California, it was Warren Buffett who introduced him to Lord Rothschild to clear him. Well, this is Dr. Stan here at Radio Liberty. Our guest this afternoon is James Corbett. And James certainly wasn't with us last week. His wife had a child, and the wife and child are doing well. And so James is good enough to come back today to try to bring us up to date on what's going on. And certainly he was simply commenting on this whole idea that the gold bubble is gone and the gold is going to fall. And what basically that isn't true, actually. Certainly gold is down somewhat, but it's coming back nicely. And basically, of course, we have a totally fiat money system. There is no incidence in all history, and we're talking about thousands of years, where a fiat money system has existed for a very long period of time. In fact, ours has existed going back certainly almost 40 years, but I think it's reached about the end of that time, but it's going to be able to survive. And basically, of course, it's only a matter of time. The only thing that's keeping our economy going today at the present time is the fact that the Federal Reserve is simply pouring $85 billion a month into the economy. This is the only thing that's keeping our economy from collapsing. Would you agree or disagree with that, James?
Unfortunately, that's exactly right. That's what's happening at this point, is that the entire S&P rise that we're seeing right now, the so-called bull market in the S&P 500 that everyone's so excited about and seeing new record highs in the S&P basically every month, is being completely propped up by the QE, quantitative easing that they're injecting into the economy. And that's been proven now. In fact, there's an interesting chart that's up on ZeroHedge.com at the moment that basically shows what the S&P 500 looks like with the QE stimulus and without the QE stimulus, basically how much of the rise can be attributed to the QE stimulus. And it's quite shocking, really, to see basically that 90%+ of the rise that we've seen is directly correlated to the quantitative easing that they're doing at the moment. And this is just basically a big gambit to keep pumping in these phony dollars that they're just printing up and pumping into the economy, just to keep it going into the economy in this way that basically props up the stock market and it props up the bond market and absolutely nothing else. It does nothing in terms of the actual economy, as unfortunately I'm sure everyone who's listening to this broadcast is all too aware of. It's doing nothing to benefit the average person on the street. All it's doing is creating this fake paper wealth that is just a bubble that's going to burst at some point, and it's really just a question of when and how that bubble starts to pop.
And basically they keep telling us that things are great, that unemployment is dropping, but that more people are out of work. Wait a minute. The unemployment is dropping, but more people are out of work. How could that be? Well, you're not supposed to ask difficult questions or challenging questions. You have to accept what you're told. You have to believe what you're told to believe. We'll be right back. Well, this is Dr. Stan. I was just commenting. We're told that unemployment is dropping. Isn't that wonderful? And I think it's down to 7.6% unemployment. But, of course, there are more and more people out of work. Well, how could unemployment be dropping and more people be out of work? Well, the more people just gave up looking for work, so they're not in the labor market. So the unemployment rate is certainly dropping, even though more and more people have given up work and looking for work. And the thing is that the situation is not improving. Contrary to everything we're being told, I think that we are still in a recession, and certainly we have never really gotten out of it. But since the media is controlled, the average individual has no idea what's going on. The average individual thinks that things are going to get better. And sometimes people are going out and borrow money, and they're starting new housing developments or business developments. And I fear a lot of these people are in for a very big surprise one of these days. James, why don't you pick up your thoughts on what's going on? How do we explain the fact that the unemployment is dropping while more and more people are out of work?
Well, that's, as we've talked about before, it's basically just how they add up the numbers and what way they decide to manipulate those particular statistics, and whether they count people, for example, who have been off the payrolls for more than 3 months as unemployed or et cetera, et cetera. There's a lot of jiggery pokery that goes on with that. As you mentioned, John Williams of ShadowStats.com has been keeping track of that. But it just goes to show that point that we've made here on the program before, that it's so much about perception and what they want the public to be focusing on. So they don't want the public to be focusing on the actual number of people who are without work at the moment, of course, because that would not be in line with the rose-colored picture they want to paint. They want to keep people focused on that unemployment number. Or they don't want people focused on the rebound in the gold market. They want people focused on that two-day drop that hit last month. Or they want people focused on things of absolutely no economic significance whatsoever, like the fact that Iron Man 3 broke box office records this weekend with $174.1 million on its opening day or whatever it was. And this is supposed to be some sort of great economic news. And of course, it's all laughable. This is just absolute total escapism economy. But this is basically what's being shoved down the public's throat as they're infantilized, treated like children, and being told what to look at, what to pay attention to, and what not to pay attention to. And unfortunately, this is a process that's been going on a long time, and it gets more effective as more and more of the public basically gets lulled into that stupor, to the fact where they can actually not even realize that this is the slowest period of economic recovery since the Second World War. And again, thinking of the fact that this has also been the largest injection of the largest amount of liquidity into the markets in the history of the country over the past few years with the quantitative easing era, it's again quite amazing to think about that with all of that easing and injection, it's still at the slowest period of economic recovery in the last 60 years.
I think people have to realize that it took 200 years from 1789 to 1981 to accumulate $1 trillion in debt. the federal debt. Actually, Barack Obama gets this, I think, $1.3, $1.5 billion of increased debt every year now. How long can you keep doing that? So they, you can run a small deficit for a period of time. But when you're running massive deficits, and those deficits certainly other than that are simply on budget, there are a lot of things that go off budget. So we really can't get all the figures, but if you look at the, according to John Williams, we're talking about $6 or $7 trillion a year increasing the indebtedness of America, and he says it's not. So the $16.7 trillion debt is really closer to $86 trillion debt. If you use the same figures that every corporation in America is required, so-called GAAP, General Accepted Accounting Principles, that's GAAP principles. William says that the real debt is about, national debt, federal debt alone, is somewhere at $86, $87 trillion at this time. Could that really be true?
Of course it can, unfortunately, because again, as you say, the ways that they use to come up with these numbers is basically sleight of hand, and it really does depend on what they tell us. So to a certain extent, I mean, it's almost meaningless to be looking at their numbers and to be trying to gauge any sort of actual economic statistics from them because they're so much manipulated. But even within the manipulation, it's easy to see that the debt levels are still spiraling and still out of control. And this is, it's about a fundamental rot at the very heart of the system. They love to try to pretend this, whatever's happening in the economy at the moment is the result of whatever's administration is in power at the moment. But I think anyone who's been watching the economy over the last several decades, like yourself, will know it absolutely does not depend on that. And it's a Republican administration, Democrat administration. They're both doing the same things. They're both running up the debt to record levels. They're both carrying the football further and further down the field as basically the economy of the U.S. has shifted more and more over to a command and control centralized economy piece by piece. And this has been a process that's been ongoing for decades, in fact, for generations now. And unfortunately, we're seeing the end game of this and what it really looks like as so much of the economy is really now dependent on government subsidy or government stimulus or government participation or government regulation in some way, shape, or form. And of course, the entire economic house of cards is built on that fundamental government intrusion in the markets. In fact, not government at all, but really just central bank intrusion through the Federal Reserve. So it is an entire house of cards, and it's really impossible to base any particular economic assessment on whatever stats or numbers are coming out of the government offices.
Well, of course, the stability of a nation is dependent upon the stability of the monetary system. If you don't have a stable monetary system, the very political stability of the nation is in jeopardy. And of course, for years, for 150, 175 years, America had a stable financial system, but that no longer is the case. And basically, of course, what happens, it means that everybody's got their money invested. They've worked their whole lives. They've got pension funds. They've got bonds. They've got all sorts of monetary investments, certainly of one sort or another. People, I don't think, really understand that this whole thing could collapse literally within a relatively few days. And this has happened in certainly in societies in the past. And if it were to happen here, where would people look for certainly the solution? Why they'd look to the very government that created the problem? But in the process, of course, it would mean that government would have to have increased power to regulate every aspect of our society, supposedly in the name of protecting us, but I'm fear, of course, in the real name of taking away our freedom, and I believe that is ultimately the goal. They know exactly what they're doing. Mr. Bernanke is not a stupid man. Alan Greenspan before him was not a stupid man. They knew exactly what they were doing. They were destroying the monetary base of our nation, and with that, of course, laying the foundation for the impoverishment of our people. There are far more people living in poverty today than there were 3 or 4 years ago. A smaller number of people are gaining great wealth, and now we're talking about the upper 1%. And of course, they're accumulating fantastic amounts of money, whereas the average individual, many of them are just struggling to make ends meet. Our telephone number is 1-888-24-LIBERTY. 1-888-24-LIBERTY or 464-8295. James, what can people do to protect themselves? We have a lot of people here that work very hard. They have certainly they've been saving for the retirement, and certainly it's pretty hard to simply live on Social Security, although certainly a large percent of our retired people, really, I think 40-50% of them, are almost totally dependent upon Social Security. But what can the average individual out there do to protect themselves in times like this? And again, if you're out there listening audience, you have a question for James, he's far more knowledgeable than I am. The number is 1-888. That's 1-888-24-LIBERTY or 464-8295. What should people be doing to protect themselves and their families?
Well, if you ask that to a mainstream financial analyst these days, they would be telling you to invest in dividend-paying blue-chip stocks. And we can think of some of the big pharma companies or some of the big defense contractors, etc., and some of the big technology giants who are all benefiting, as we say, from this run-up in the S&P 500 that's coming through this quantitative easing. And to a certain extent, I think they'd have a point, because we are in that S&P bull market, and although it is completely fictitious and basically a bubble that's waiting to be popped, I'm sure it does still have further to go before it will pop, so I'm sure there is money to be made there. But of course, I would not be recommending that, not only because it's fundamentally based on the illusion of the phony fiat dollar that's really just part of this entire system of illusion, but also because, of course, when you do invest in those types of companies, you are in some way really investing in the not only your economic enslavement, but your enslavement in the big pharma grid, in big agra, in these big businesses, which unfortunately have nothing to do with the free market capitalist enterprise system that America is supposedly there to represent, and everything to do with the crony capitalist system that is wreaking such havoc on this planet. So I could not in any conscience recommend that as a way of investing or storing wealth. Again, the only advice I can really give is what I would do myself. And personally, I'm investing in commodities. Precious metals specifically, I think, are the best place to be storing value at this time, especially with the big swings in currencies that we're seeing all over the board, with the ECB falling, the euro vault falling, and the dollar trying to hang on to its value against the yen, against the Malaysian ringgit, even Australian dollar. There's such big swings that the only, I think, safe store of value for long term is the precious metals markets, gold, silver, platinum, other precious metals, and that's where I'm putting my money at any rate. And I'm not here to tell people what to do, but that's my
idea. My telephone number is 1-888-24-LIBERTY, 1-888-24-LIBERTY. I would point out that our commodity markets are manipulated. There's a small group of people, I call them the Brotherhood of Darkness, six major banks control 69% of all the monetary assets in America, and the other 5,800 banks control the other 31-32%. Ladies and gentlemen, you're never going to hear this sort of thing. The last thing they want you to understand is that most people are going to be impoverished before this thing is over. If you have a question for James, 1-888-24-LIBERTY, 464-8295, give us a call. Well, James, what's happening in other countries as far as gold and silver is concerned? Here in America, of course, I think a lot of people certainly have seen the dramatic decline in the price of gold, but even far more dramatically decline in the price of silver, which was almost up to $50 an ounce, and now it's down to $24 an ounce. Certainly, they find it, I think, very, very hard to believe that this is all the product of manipulation. And yet, you really believe it is?
It absolutely, I think we're seeing the manipulations that have gone on in the gold markets for a long time. And it's interesting, we talked a couple of weeks ago when that big drop happened, we talked about how this might be the detachment of the physical gold market from the paper gold market, basically the paper gold, the GLD holdings that represent supposedly gold, but aren't actual gold in someone's hand. They're just pieces of paper, claims for pieces of gold. And we talked about how the prices might be diverging at this point, where people are still continuing to buy physical gold, perhaps even more strongly than before, whilst dumping their paper gold. And it seems that that's exactly what's happening, as we see the GLD holdings are starting to plummet really over the past month. And meanwhile, throughout the world, retail demand for gold is still soaring. And in fact, we see this happening in many different parts of the globe. But of course, India is always a strong retail gold outlet. But another interesting place to look at is Shanghai, where apparently the Shanghai Gold Exchange has actually now stopped physical gold delivery. And there's only a couple of possible explanations for that. One is that they physically can't supply the gold. They don't have it. Or the other one is that the government there is trying to step in and prevent a run on gold. But either way, it shows that there's, again, a huge and growing interest in gold in China, not only from the central bank, which we know has been buying lots of gold behind the scenes, but from the people there as well. So I think more and more people around the world are catching on to the fact that in this time of huge currency swings, gold is going to be a good place to store your wealth while we see what takes place in these markets. And this is starting to happen again, not just in the traditional markets like in India and other places, but now in China and other places are starting to drive this market as well. So I think we really are seeing the end of the era in which the types of manipulations we've seen in the past are possible. But then again, we've seen that they've managed to pull that particular manipulation rabbit out of their hat so many times that I guess I wouldn't put anything past them at this point.
And, Kirsten, are the Chinese and Indians individuals buying a great deal of gold and silver? And hang on to that thought. We'll be back in just a moment. Well, this is Dr. Stan. Our guest is James Corbett. And this is the end. You can read his articles in the International Forecaster on a weekly basis. If you're out there in the listening audience, you have a question or comment, our telephone number is 1-888-24-LIBERTY, 1-888-24-LIBERTY, or 464-8295. James is simply pointing out that the thing with the drop in the price of gold, the Chinese civilians and Indians are simply buying up gold as rapidly as they can. But you go to Shanghai, well, the Shanghai city is city, you can't get the gold. You can try to buy it there, but they said the gold is not readily available in Shanghai. Would that be a fair estimate?
Well, they've actually halted the physical delivery at this point. So, yes, there is certainly more buyers than there are pieces to sell at this point.
Now, basically, of course, it's said that America has about 8,000 tons of gold. Do we have any idea how much gold the other countries are holding? And do we have any idea whether America really has the 8,000 tons of gold that they talk about? I mean, well, certainly the government says also things that just aren't true. I mean, the story of what happened on September 11th when almost 3,000 Americans were killed, supposedly by buildings being hit by planes, but those buildings came down by controlled demolition. Building 7, all you need to do is watch Building 7 come down, controlled demolition, and then very carefully watch the Twin Towers come down, and you can see the top of the building simply vaporized before the rest of the building comes down. Why would those tops of the buildings vaporize? Well, controlled demolition. So basically, if we can't believe the government, can we believe that they really have 8 tons of gold, 8,000 tons of gold, as they say?
Well, I would be highly skeptical at best about that, especially given the fact that they don't allow physical audits of their holdings. So I think the promises of 8,000 tons aren't worth the paper that it's not written on. We do know what other countries do claim to have in reserve. So, for example, we do know that the second largest reserve nation in terms of gold holdings is supposedly Germany with about 3,400 tons. But as we've seen in recent months, of course, Germany is now trying to repatriate some of their gold from the United States and the United Kingdom and getting a bit of the runaround from the Federal Reserve and other banks where their gold is being held so that it will take a period of years to get even a portion of their gold back. And this is, again, part of a growing worldwide citizen movement to repatriate gold in a number of countries to make sure that the physical, actual gold really is there and that they really do have the gold that is claimed on the record books. And again, this goes back to fundamental concerns over whether or not there is there is that gold there, and if so, who actually owns it? Because unfortunately, what seems to have taken place is that a lot of these gold holdings have been leased out in various forms, in various shady deals, and the indications of this have been going on for at least the past decade or decade and a half even. So we're seeing that, and we're seeing a lot of countries getting scared, and we see other countries that are getting on this bandwagon, and of course there's also the Swiss citizens initiative to try to basically count the gold and to take a physical account of the stock that's supposedly there, with Switzerland the seventh largest at least officially proclaimed gold holder in the world with over 1,040 tons of it. So again, this is something that's catching on, and it just once again goes to show, I think, the underlying economic reality behind the economic picture that's being painted for us by the headlines and the talk about the S&P 500 and et cetera. I think what's really going on at the bottom is a race between central banks to try to get as much gold as they can. And it makes you wonder, do they know something that we don't? Well, not really, because we do know what's going on here. We do know that the banks are holding onto the gold because they are aware that whatever system comes along to replace the inevitable eventual crash of the current U.S. dollar-led system, it's going to be based on something more tangible than what it has been in the past. And in that regard, of course, gold is going to be the most likely candidate for what will back that up. That's exactly
right. Fine. Well, if you're out there in the listening audience, you have a question or comment, give us a call at 1-888-24-LIBERTY. 1-888-24-LIBERTY. We have Harvey calling us from Michigan. Hi, Harvey. How are we doing? Oh, it's Harry calling us from Michigan. Hi, Harry. How are we doing?
Doing good. Harvey would have been close enough, Dr. Stan. How are you folks doing tonight?
Doing just fine, thanks. Do you have a question for our guest?
I do. In fact, Mr. Corbett, I appreciate you responding to an email I sent you a couple weeks ago regarding Harry S. Stan. And you told me that the dollar, even if gold, the dollar deflates, that gold would still have its relative purchasing power in either case. So my question to you is, if a person had the, referring to myself, had the majority of wealth tied up to gold assets, you think would, I know you don't give investment advice, but would it be wise to perhaps offset that with cash? Because you believe cash will become king for a while.
All right, hold that thought a little bit. Let that sit there. James, respond during the break here. And if you have a question, give us a call, 1-888-24-LIBERTY.
Let us all be grateful for a land of faith as we raise our voices in a solemn prayer.
All right, Harry, basically the question, as I understand it, is, you probably have most of your wealth or most of your holdings in gold, but you want to know whether you should put the rest of it into cash, because cash could be king for a time. Is that basically the question?
Exactly.
All right, fine. How would you respond to that, James?
Well, it is a very good question, and it is a good point to be made. And I would like to stress that I don't, I think we've stressed before, I think people should be diversifying their portfolio. And although I do, of course, think that that gold is a good place to be storing wealth for long-term savings, But I don't think it's the only place that people should have their money at this point. And I think he's right. There are different ways that the collapse can play out, including we could see everything from a mild inflation / global economic recovery, which is extremely unlikely, to serious deflationary depression, to inflation basically getting out of hand. There are a lot of different ways this can play out, and in each different one, different asset classes will be able to basically maintain or even gain their value. And that's obviously distributed between equities and bonds and gold and other investments. And so I would again like to point people to, I think, a very interesting article that laid this out that came across the news wires a couple of weeks ago, called Protection from Japanese Insanity, and or Protecting Yourself from Japanese Insanity, sorry. And in that, they talked about a fail-safe investing portfolio. Of course, I don't claim anything of the sort, but at any rate, it's interesting to look at at. And basically what they're talking about is 25% split evenly between long-term bonds, cash, stocks, and gold. And basically no matter which of the four collapse scenarios that they outline in that article take place, at least two of those asset classes in each of them will be maintaining or growing their value and will be able to offset whatever happens in the others. So again, that's one idea for an investment idea, a portfolio that people could be looking into. I agree that I don't think that everything should be in precious metals or any one class, because again, that's just asking for trouble if and when these types of spikes and dips hit the markets.
I think there's three rules of investing, Harry, and it's diversify. Anything else, Harry?
No, thank you very much. I appreciate that. You gentlemen have a wonderful day.
Okay, fine. Well, I guess that was Harry calling from Michigan, and we'll be back here in just a moment with our guest here. Well, this is Dr. Stan. Our guest is James Corbett, who writes for the International Forecaster. If you have a question or comment, our telephone number is 1-888-24-LIBERTY. 1-888-24-LIBERTY, or here in the Central Coast of California at 831-464-8295. That's 831-464-8295. Now, I would simply mention that our last caller was asking, he said certainly he's invested in gold and precious metals, but that basically he wondered if he should have some money in cash as well, because, of course, there might come a time when cash would be king. And Chris James certainly agreed that nobody knows exactly what should be done. And James had suggested, certainly, although gold and silver are an excellent means of investing, you should be diversified and you should have various holdings. And, of course, I commented that there are three rules about investing, and you must certainly adhere to all three of those rules. The first one is diversify. The second one is diversify. And the third one is diversify. And I'll never forget talking to a Swiss banker one time. And basically, I used that line with him, and he just smiled and said, "You're absolutely right." Well, our telephone number is 1-888-24-LIBERTY, 1-888-24-LIBERTY, or 464-8295. And incidentally, that Swiss banker is a chief investor for one of the largest, I think the third largest bank in the world. So certainly the fact he agreed, I felt very good about it. But before we go on, James, I want you to tell our listeners how they can get your writings with the International Forecaster, and then how they can get copies of your own personal publications.
Well, absolutely, and thank you for that. And I, of course, have been taking a week or so off of the International Forecaster because of the new baby and getting used to the new routine. But I will be back with a midweek update this Wednesday in this Wednesday's edition of the Forecaster. Of course, in the meantime, the Forecaster still contains lots of articles and news information, links, special reports, all sorts of information, up to 40 to 50 pages in each edition. So I hope people will check it out. Again, if you want to see a copy of the Forecaster, you can go to theinternationalforecaster.com. That's theinternationalforecaster.com. You can see some of the articles, example articles that are up there. You can also request a free sample copy that you can take a look at before you decide to subscribe. And if and when you do decide to subscribe, you can do that right there on the website, theinternationalforecaster.com. You can also write in by snail mail. You can write in P.O. Box 7752, Winter Haven, Florida, 33883. That's P.O. Box 7752, Winter Haven, Florida, 33883. And people who are interested in my own work other than the International Forecaster, I would just suggest that they check out my website. It's CorbettReport.com. That's C-O-R-B-E-T-T report.com. And there you can find all of my news and information, my articles, interviews, videos, all of the media that I create there is all available for free download. So I hope people will check out the site and use it as a resource.
And ladies and gentlemen, we are entering a very, very dangerous period economically as far as America is concerned. You're going to have to be diversified. You're going to have to be watching very, very carefully. If you're in the stock market, you've got to have stops in so they can be get out before, because we could have a massive collapse at any time. I don't know if it's going to happen, but I certainly wouldn't be at all surprised. And they know exactly how to fleece the public, and basically the way this system works is that most people end up losing. This is the way it is. 90% of the people are going to be losing in the stock market if they're trying to speculate on it. Do not do it unless you're an expert. I know a few people who can play the market and do well, but I will tell you, I was never smart enough to do that. Well, our telephone number is 1-888-24-LIBERTY, 464-8295. The board's lighting up. And first guest is Larry calling from the state of Washington. Hi, Larry. Do you have a question or comment?
Yeah, Dr. Stan, how are you doing? Hello, Mr. Corbett. When you say that the United States supposedly has 88,000 tons of gold, where are you getting that information?
It's 8,000 tons. Basically, yeah. Chris, I read prolifically about 3 or 4 hours a day. This is the figure that, my understanding, James, is that an accurate figure, 8,000 or 8,200 ounces of gold, 8,200? Anyway, what are your thoughts?
Well, actually, it's 8,133.5 tons of gold. That's the official reserve estimate, and that's made by the World Gold Council, which is a nonprofit association of the world's leading gold mining companies, etc., etc. So if you want to find the actual source on that, you could just type, for example, gold reserve into a search engine and look at the Wikipedia page, and that will tell you the official estimate that's coming from the World Gold Council there, and that's supposedly the most accurate data that they have up to date.
Okay,
but Larry, it doesn't mean it's honest. It doesn't mean it's really there. This is what they say. Go ahead.
There was an interesting article in the January 13th International Forecaster on this subject by a fellow named Adak, Alfred Adak, or Adak.
Yeah, he writes. I think he writes for Melody. Go ahead.
And he gives he shows a graph in there showing the back. In the early 50s, the U.S. supposedly had 20,000 tons of gold. Now, I read a very interesting book called Good as Gold by Christopher Weber, and he catalogs numerous attempts by the Congress to audit the gold piles of the United States, and the Treasury has never allowed them to do it. At best, all they'll do is go in there and let them take random sampling and then extrapolate. So there's never really been an honest tally of how much gold the United States owns. If you look at Weber's figures, go back to 1953, he said that we had 631 million ounces, and that compares pretty good to 20,000 tons. And if you look at 1975, he said we were down to 274 million ounces, and that compares pretty good with 8,100 tons.
Okay,
this is jive.
Okay, fine, Larry. Basically, we don't know whether it's there or not. This is what they claim. All we can do is just wait and watch, and I just hope it's there, but I'm not really certain, or that it hasn't actually been sold, or hasn't been transferred to our international banks. And one of these days we're going to find out. I fear, of course, when we find out, most Americans are going to be impoverished. Anything else you want to say before we let you go? Because we've got a full board.
The only comment I'd have is that if they won't allow an audit, it makes me very suspicious that it's not there.
And I think you're absolutely right. Would you agree with that, James?
Absolutely. If they have nothing to hide, then what are they hiding? That's the question.
I agree. Thanks very much, Larry. And let's go to Bruce calling us from Durand, Michigan. That's Bruce calling from Durand, Michigan. Again, our telephone number, 1-888-24-LIBERTY. Rob, we have a line open, 1-888-24-LIBERTY or 464-8295. And certainly, ladies and gentlemen, remember what James said. If there's nothing to hide, why do they refuse to allow an audit? And I think they have something to hide. I think that they've absconded with that the wealth has been distributed to the elite that run the world. Bruce, do you have a question or comment?
Yeah, it's not so much about gold and silver, but about the dispute over islands around Japan. I watch the Taiwanese news and the Vietnamese news also on our local university. It's called the Megahertz Network. It has all the different world news. And the Japanese news, of course, also NHK. They seem to... Is this all about national pride? You got Russia, China, Taiwan, Japan, Vietnam, all arguing about these little tiny islands that are only like a couple of acres. Do they actually have value, or is it just national pride involved?
All right, James, what are your thoughts? Certainly Bruce wants to know, why all this conflict about these islands? They're really not that important. They're not that big. What's all the fuss about?
Well, the national governments of China and Japan and other interested parties would like the people to believe that it's about national pride and would like to stir up national sentiment, because that always plays well at the voting booth. But I don't think it has anything to do with that, at least not from the Japanese perspective. If you ask the average person living here in Japan, they wouldn't even be able to point out those islands on a map, let alone explain why it's important that that Japan has them, let alone care very much, particularly which way it goes. This is another one of those situations where it benefits the power elite in the political circles to squabble over these islands for all sorts of different reasons, but it does nothing for the average person. And there is some economic interest in these islands that are being disputed by China and Japan, the Senkaku Islands, as we call them in here in Japan. There's underwater oil and gas estimate reserve there that shows that there are untapped reserves sitting there under the seabed around the islands themselves. So there is potentially a big economic reward to be gained by whichever country can basically lay claim to them. And I think that's at least part of what's going on there. But another part of what's going on and why we saw the big stir up over those islands in November, December was because both China and Japan were undergoing leadership changes at the time. And again, it did help to appeal to their political bases to whip up national sentiment over these islands that, again, does not benefit the average person in China or Japan in any way, shape, or form.
Reality is usually scoffed at. Illusion is usually king. I think that's an excellent approach. Anything else, Bruce, you want to ask before we let you go?
I've wondered for a long time about Japan's relations with Taiwan. Do they consider Taiwan a better friend than they consider the People's Republic of China?
I would imagine so. I don't really know on the formal level, but that would certainly make sense because they're both, of course, under the U.S. Military umbrella, so they're basically allies in that sense, and I would assume they would have more in common with Taiwan. In terms of actual diplomatic relations, I'm not really sure what the situation is, but I would imagine that China and Japan have shaky relations at best, especially with the recent flare-ups that we've seen over these islands and other, you know, hotbed issues.
Okay, well, thank you very much, Bruce. And our telephone number is, again, 1-888-24-LIBERTY, 1-888-24-LIBERTY, or here in the Central Coast of California at 464-8295. We've got Frank calling from Salinas. Frank, do you have a question or comment?
A question. What happened in Argentina about 15 years ago? Devalued the peso, I think it is. And what would happen if they owned a house in Argentina, but they owned foreign stocks? Or foreign bonds, or what happened to their peso? Did it devalue to like half of what it was before, and then they went to the grocery store, it cost quite as much? Is that how it works?
Well, yes. I mean, what we saw in Argentina was a period of hyperinflation. And in fact, by the time that hyperinflationary period was over in 2002 and they had to basically release a new peso, I think the peso was trading at something like, I can't remember the exact number, but it was something in the range of one millionth of what it was in the 1970s. So we saw just an incredible hyperinflationary scenario there taking place in Argentina. And unfortunately, their inflationary doldrums remain, and in fact, Argentina is again experiencing some deep inflationary pain. So, of course, what that produced back in the 2001-2002 period, where the so-called IMF riots, where you had the people basically taking to the streets protesting the types of austerity measures that were being proposed by the IMF at that time, and basically banging pots and pans and trying to raise awareness of what was going on there as people were starting to starve to death on the streets in a country that really, throughout its history, has enjoyed quite a bit of wealth, probably one of the wealthiest South American nations throughout its history, but just has undergone some incredible economic turmoil over the past few decades, and unfortunately still continuing right now.
Frank, the thing is that when you're facing the possibility of inflation, you want to be in physical assets, whether it be property or whether it be commodities or whether it be farmland or whether it be gold and silver. You want to be in something that has intrinsic value. The last thing you want to do is be in money or anything tied to money like bonds or stocks or any pension funds or insurance policies, because, of course, they simply inflate away or destroy the value of those things. And so there's the smart people, the sort of wealthy, they're in debt, certainly in fixed assets, and they encourage people, look, you can trust the government, they would never betray you. We're telling you the truth. You know, simply trust us, everything's going to be fine, and you wake up one day, and the wealth that you've worked for all of your life is gone. That's happened time and time again throughout history. It's happening certainly throughout Europe today, and soon it's going to be happening here in America, I'm firmly convinced. You can't keep pouring almost $85 billion a month into the economy indefinitely without eventually having inflation. Our telephone number is 1-888-24-LIBERTY, 1-888-24-LIBERTY, or 464-8295. You got a question or comment for our guest, James Corbett. Frank, do you have anything else you wanted to ask?
Would James and you say that what happened in Cyprus, was that a devaluation of their currency?
Well, that isn't precisely the way I'd frame it. It wasn't about their currency per se, because of course they're on the euro. It was really more to do with a type of confiscation of bank accounts, which is unfortunately is something that I think we're going to see taking place more and more in this era of big banking collapses and turmoil. But it wasn't about the currency per se. It was, well, I suppose it was, because of course this is about them being tied to that euro, the sinking stone, and that basically drawing down the whole ship. But in terms of a currency devaluation, I don't think that's exactly what was taking place there.
Basically, what had happened, Frank, is that the banks had borrowed or invested a great deal in like Greek bonds and other things, and suddenly these have lost value. So the banks were going to lose a lot of money. And rather than saying, all right, you lost money, you go bankrupt, they said, oh, we can't have the banks going bankrupt. We're going to let them steal the money from the people who've invested in the banks. And certainly, I think if you had up to 100,000 euros in the bank, you were guaranteed, that was guaranteed by the government. But if you were certainly one of those unfortunate people who had certainly €1 million, a couple of million euros, and you know if the banks were stable, you woke up one day and they'd simply taken most of everything you had. And basically this is what banks do right here in America today. I think that they guarantee accounts up to about $100,000. So if you have more than $100,000 in any bank, why that is certainly susceptible to simply confiscation. They're not going to talk to you about that, but that's the reality, and this sort of thing happened during the Great Depression, and believe me, federal government has a totally fallacious system based upon a fiat money system. And of course, you could either lose your money that way, or you could lose your money simply by destroying its value literally overnight. Hey, thanks very much, Frank. Appreciate your call. And let's go to Shelley calling us from Tri-Cities in Washington. Shelley, do you have a question for our guest?
Yes, I do. I wondered about the safety of putting gold into an IRA, like if you have an existing IRA, converting it to a gold one. Is that going to be safe? Because I have heard rumors that they plan to maybe hijack IRAs.
Well, James, how would you respond to Shelley? She's concerned that maybe they'll hijack them.
At the end of the day, that's always a possibility. If you don't physically have it in your hand, then you don't physically have it. It doesn't mean that you have to avoid it completely, but of course, as we said before, diversify, diversify, diversify. I wouldn't be putting all of my gold investments in a gold IRA, but it is one thing that people can at least be looking into as a possibility.
Hold that thought, Shelley. We'll be back in just a moment right here at Radio Liberty. Shelley, you have anything else to say before we let you go?
Just thank you all so much for all the information you all give, and helping us to prepare for what's ahead.
Well, I just appreciate the fact you're out there listening. Get other people to listen. We can't reach everybody, but we reach the people we can. We don't get a salary. We do what we do because, well, I feel I'm called upon to do it and to tie together what's happening, not only from an economic and a historical and political point of view, but from a spiritual point of view, because there are powerful spiritual forces at work as well. Shelley, God bless. Thanks very much.
Thank you so much.
Bye-bye. James, you've got about 2 minutes to wrap up the program. What are the thoughts you'd like to leave with our listeners across America, across the world?
Well, a couple of thoughts. Of course, one of them, as we see what's taking place in Syria this week with Israel's strikes against Syria, we see some potentially huge destabilization that's going on in the Syrian campaign, which may or may not bode well or poorly for the prospect of war breaking out in the Middle East again. So we'll have to keep our eyes on that very closely, because of course, not only in terms of the human loss, which is of course the greatest loss, but of course we're also looking at potential economic effects of this. It would have huge ramifications if the tensions there spill over into something more, which is looking more and more likely to be the case. And another thing that I'd like people to cogitate on this week is to think about who the real winners of this economic system are. And again, if all we are doing is measuring the value of people's lives and of their worth in terms of dollars, then that would make people like the Warren Buffetts and George Soroses and even the Al Gores, who are literally have hundreds of millions of dollars in their bank accounts, the winners in this society. And I think we can all agree that those types of people are not necessarily the winners, and that we have to start thinking about different ways to value not only in terms of the things that we own, but the things that we want to keep for the future, not just in terms of paper dollars or figures in people's bank accounts. So again, at the end of the day, this isn't about money. This is simply about protecting people's futures. And that's why I'm doing what I'm doing. And I assume that's why most of the people are listening. And it's not to do with money itself. So the obsession with money, I think, is something that we have to address at a future point.
Right, well, we certainly can. Money is not the answer. We may end up losing everything. But in the meantime, we certainly, it's nice to have. It will give us a certain amount of security. But I personally believe our only security is in our relationship with our family and with our Lord. God bless you, James. Thanks very much for being with us. We'll look forward to talking to you next week. And Cindy, give the wife and the baby a hug for us, will you?
Will do. Thank you.